Welcome to Civil Discourse. This podcast will use government documents to illuminate the workings of the American government and offer context around the effects of government agencies in your everyday life. And now your hosts, Nia Rogers, Public Affairs Librarian, and Dr. John Augenbaugh, Political Science Professor.
Hey, Augie.
Good morning, Nia. How are you?
When I snap my fingers, it makes you giggle, doesn't it?
Yes, it's kind of sort of like you're expecting me to perform on command.
Which I'm not, or I would throw you a fish. But it's it's because of the way we record, and I need to, like, start the thing. I know it's weird. But anyway, if anybody ever hears snapping in the background, that's what that's about. So, but we have to kudo Tim, who came by my office and mentioned that he would like to be the first librarian in the Space Force.
Yeah, so...
When we run the world... And I'm in charge of the Space Force.
No, you're going to run the world. Okay, I'm just going to be in your legal counsel.
Awesome.
Yes.
We have to appoint Tim as our space librarian.
Yes. And listeners, we're making reference to a previous podcast episode where Nia, okay, wanted to be the first secretary of our Space Force.
That's right. And I put the website on our LibGuide.
Yes.
On our research guide. So if you're interested in looking at their website is fascinating. I'm gonna leave it at that. It's fascinating. But it's also fun. And so we wished him all the luck in the world with getting on the Space Force and being a librarian in space.
Well, and perhaps in a future podcast episode, we should go ahead and talk about, you know, how we would create a nation out in space, you know, kind of sort of like, you know, what the framers did.
Oh, if we're going to colonize the moon, what are we going to do?
Yeah,
how are we going to do it?
You know, like the framers in Philadelphia, the summer of 1787.
Okay. Oh, except that was a hot, sweaty mess, wasn't it? Like nobody was allowed to leave and it was 9 billion degrees and they didn't have air conditioning because it was in the 1700s.
Oh, I mean, hey, we can replicate those conditions if you want to.
I'm thinking, no, that sounds terrible. I would think that it's some point, arguments become just whatever you want. I need to leave. Like I have I have to leave this building before I murder someone.
Yeah,
heat.
Yeah, you're not a big fan of the heat.
No,
you know me on the other hand, I'm just like, oh, it's like 100 degrees with, you know, 70% humidity. I'm like,
Why don't I be swimming at that point?
Why don't we go for a 15-mile run?
Yeah, no, see, that's all wrong. Why don't we go sit in front of the world's coldest air conditioner, perhaps inside a freezer? Like, what is wrong with people? But anyway, no, everybody has to like something. I happen to like it when it's – I like the spring and the fall. My ideal world is about 70 degrees. Like, if the world could be 70 degrees all the time on all parts of it, one, nothing would grow, so that would be terrible. But it would be extremely comfortable. That's why I would love to live in San Diego. Apparently, their average temperature is 72 degrees.
Yeah.
But their cost of living is something like $9 trillion a year. I mean, you just have to have a lot of money.
It's not the most expensive city in the United States, but I think it's in the top 10.
Well, and given the climate, I mean,
well, you know,
I guess you're paying to live where
sure.
It's extremely temperate.
This probably does not shock you, but I pay very little mind to the weather.
Yeah. I'm not surprised by that. Considering that in the dead of winter, you came to record wearing cargo shorts.
Sure. It was comfortable.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Because you ain't right. But anyway.
So
I said to you, let's talk about federal holidays. And you, dashed clever researcher that you are, went out and found the Congressional Research Service paper titled Federal Holidays, Evolution and Current Practices. You gave me homework, which it's so professorial of you that I shouldn't be surprised. But I read it. Mr. Jacob R. Strauss, who is an analyst on the Congress, wrote this in May of 2014. And I'll put a link on the research guide.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to me. But what's fascinating to me and what I want to talk to you about is sort of this idea that Congress can make all the holidays it wants, but the states don't have to care about that at all.
That's federalism 101.
I mean, they made, what, five holidays to start, right? They made...
Yeah, it was New Year's Day. what was it? President's Day, no, what was it, four of them?
Washington's birthday started out, right?
Yeah, okay.
And Independence Day, Thanksgiving Day, and Christmas Day.
Yeah, so those were the first four, okay? And then they added Washington's birthday.
As the fifth.
Yeah, which morphed into now what we call President's
Right, President's Day, Day because there's been more than Washington. But it's funny to me that they were immediately they wanted a Washington celebration. Like they wanted a king so much in some ways.
Oh, yeah.
That they're like, you know what, we'll just, your birthday will be like a big national holiday. Well, of course, also at that time, big national holiday was what, like 15 states and
I mean
a relatively small amount of people compared to what we have now, but still.
Yeah, I mean, but what you're talking about is the fact that I don't think many Americans understand that a national holiday is a legislative process. I mean, it is wholly political, okay, and it doesn't matter if a president wants a particular national holiday. It doesn't necessarily matter if the states decide on a state holiday. The national government doesn't have to. The national government can go ahead and say, well, these are our holidays, and the states can go ahead and say, well, thanks for sharing. We're not going to honor it, right? You know, so right now, Columbus—
How nice for you.
Yeah. So right now—
Inauguration Day.
Yeah.
Right? They have an Inauguration Day
every 4 years.
In D.C.
Yes.
But only in D.C.
The rest of the country can, basically ignore it, right?
And immigration schmimmigrate, or inauguration schmimmigrate.
Yeah, right?
I can't say it, but yeah.
I mean, it's like Columbus Day. Columbus Day is still a national holiday, okay? But we're now at a point that I think it's only 27 or 28 states actually recognize Columbus Day.
Well, and that's hugely political, isn't it? Because part of it is, he could have been seen as a conqueror type individual, which you may or may not want to celebrate.
Okay.
Native Americans are like, dude.
Yeah,
got here and killed a bunch of people. Except didn't actually get here anyway.
Yeah, but he's considered
Haiti or Dominican
genocidal.
Republic.
Okay,
right.
Okay.
So there's all these controversial.
Yeah.
So states are just sort of gently undoing it by just not recognizing it.
Sure.
Okay. Wait. No. Let's start.
Okay.
Back at the beginning, because I have to admit, before you sent me homework, she said slightly bitterly.
This gave you a flashback, didn't it?
It did. When I was your student.
I should have given you a trigger warning.
I know this sounds stupid, but I honestly thought that most of the federal holidays came out of presidential
decrees
or
executive orders.
I just kind of assumed that, and then they were carried, because executive orders can be carried on from president, but if they don't undo it,
that's right,
it's permanent.
That's right.
So I just kind of thought, oh, well, you know, Lincoln made this one, and Eisenhower made this one, and Kennedy made this one, and those are holiday, or like Reagan with Martin Luther King. Right? I just kind of assumed that the president just sort of caveat did that. And according to this, that's totally not true. It comes out of the Congress.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple instances where the practice of a particular holiday first gets created with a president declaring such and such day, you know, like Armistice Day, but then Congress then has a decision. Do we go ahead and ratify it into law, or do we basically just go ahead and ignore the president saying that this is a particular day, okay? Because again—
Or do we treat it as that day one time?
Time, that's it, right?
Armistice Day was originally because of World War I, right? November 11th?
Yes.
November 11th?
Yeah. Yeah,
something like early November.
Yeah. Okay. And it morphed into or evolved into, after World War II, Veterans Day.
Because we got more veterans.
Yeah, we have more veterans.
I mean, we had more wars.
Yeah,
we just went around having wars all over the place.
Yeah, World War II, the Korean War, et cetera. So, I mean, but again, that, you know, think about, for instance.
So wouldn't technically Memorial Day be an Armistice Day, in the sense that Memorial Day started off as Decoration Day for the Civil War.
That's right.
So we have always had a thing about
honoring
our veterans.
That's right.
Whether they have given their lives or you know, they have given their service, and we've always honored that service. So that's been a big thing for us, even from the beginning of the, like all of the sort of other holidays, other than what I think of as the holidays that most people agree are holidays, like most, whether one can argue now that there's, that the United States is a Christian nation. When it began, it was heavily Christian nation. So Christmas Day makes sense to me. And Thanksgiving is an interesting thing because I'm wondering, like Thanksgiving has really morphed into now it's sort of quick, eat that so we can go buy stuff, which is, so it should be called Commercialism Day. But New Year's makes sense because you're starting off the new year, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So give your employees, but it's not all employees, right? Like it wasn't always all employees.
No, in fact,
that got all of, even with the first five.
Yeah, it wasn't until, interestingly enough, a man who ended up becoming a Supreme Court Justice, Sutherland, he was working in the Attorney General's office and was asked to give an opinion as to whether or not federal employees should get a paid holiday because there were, in the first decade of the 1900s, five national holidays. Okay, because we added George Washington's birthday as a holiday, right?
Right.
And the executive branch was asked to give an opinion, and it was George Sutherland, who ended up becoming a Supreme Court justice, who said, well, it's pretty much become the practice. So we should probably just go ahead and ratify what has become the practice of giving federal government workers, including those who work in the local government of the District of Columbia, a paid holiday. Okay? So even that was a kind of sort of truncated process. I mean, it wasn't like when these first five holidays were created, the United States Congress actually thought about giving federal government workers a day off. And remember,
they were giving them a day off.
But they,
it was, whether they were paying
paid,
them or not,
yeah,
right?
Like, because many agency heads just went ahead and said, "Well, it's a holiday; take the day off."
But if you were paid by the day or
by the hour, okay,
that could seriously injure your financial situation.
And also remember too, we're not talking about a lot of employees, because the federal government does not expand dramatically in terms of personnel until the New Deal. I mean, well into the 1920s, okay, the level of government with the most employees was at the state and local level. I mean, even today, okay, the bulk of government employees in the United States are employed by state and local government jurisdictions.
Well, that makes sense because there are a lot more cities than there are federal governments.
Well, but also,
You know what I mean? Like every city has to have a certain level of.
Okay, that's true. But
city
remember,
employee.
Funding drives. Government spending, as we talked about in one of our earliest podcast episodes, is driven by personnel costs, right? So state and local governments frequently hire more people if they have more revenue and there's more demand for services. State and local governments today frequently are implementing federal government programs. So as long as the federal government continues to be the bank, okay, state and local governments are going to be like, okay, we're going to be administering this program and we need these people to do so, right? But that's – and I'm glad we're talking about personnel and we can get back to how national holidays have been created in this country, because it's a political process in many different facets. But according to some economists, every national holiday costs the nation, okay, well over $200 million. Okay. Yeah, because you're talking about wages being paid for no work.
Okay. You know, but wait.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to push back on that a little.
Yeah.
Because civil discourse, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to civilly push back rather than just shove you back in your chair, which is, you know, regular discourse. So here's my pushback. I am a state employee. Mm-hmm. And state employees get certain days off,
mm-hmm.
right? In Virginia, MLK comes to mind. The university,
which is our last created national holiday, by the way.
Right, President Reagan, right,
yeah.
signed it into law, but I'm not sure where it got started in the system.
But it took 15 years.
Of course, it did. I'm not surprised by that. I'm sure it was controversial. I'm sure there are lots that are, and I'm sure that there are ones that people want that haven't been done.
Oh, yeah, we can discuss some of those.
Ones
those
that people
are really
have done
good.
That people don't like. So I'm sure
yeah.
that there's on mm-hmm. both sides and sort of, dang it. But anyway, so but let's just take that into for a moment into account. So the university is more or less closed. There are some parts of the university that are open, but the majority of it is closed. The library, in fact, runs on a skeleton crew, and so I am not expected to be in the library. However, the other 4 days of that week, I am expected to hustle what didn't happen on Monday and make sure that it happens before I leave on Friday. And I would put to you that the vast majority of employees in the federal government are doing that too. They are taking shorter lunches. They are, you know what I mean? Like they're cramming in because work still has to get done and things still have to be done on time.
According to economists, your assumption is incorrect.
Well, economists are boogerheads and they're wrong.
But I mean,
I know
my experience, and my experience is much what you described.
Right. You have the day off on MLK, right? You're not supposed to do anything. Please tell me that you are not really working on your classes or answering student emails or if there's a holiday at the right time of the year grading papers.
Oh, sure.
Or doing or you're doing the research that underpins the work that you do.
Sure.
Right. You're doing all that. It's not like you took that day off and you said, oh, I'm not going to think about congressional law at all, administrative law at all. Nope, not me, not today. You're not doing that.
No.
You're prepping in some way. You're doing something like that. So I'm not sure I'm completely buying what they're selling.
Okay.
I agree there is a cost.
Okay, but I mean
but holy cow.
And you and I can go ahead and say that based on our own personal experience, it doesn't happen. But one of the things that I remember, and I'm old enough to remember this, one of the reasons why the holiday for Martin Luther King Jr. Took so long to be accepted was there were some states and some economists who argued that if you created, and we now have 11 national holidays, okay? If you created 11th, yeah, there's 11 now, right? Yeah.
I'm sorry I made a face because I'm like, wow, that's almost one a month.
You got New Year's, Independence, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. Those were the first four. Then you have Washington's birthday, Decoration Day, which evolved into Memorial Day. Okay, so that's six. Labor Day is 7. Veterans Day, 8. Thanksgiving, 9.
No, Thanksgiving was listed before.
Okay. Inauguration Day is 9.
So,
Columbus Day is 10. And Martin Luther King Jr. Day is 11.
Right. Although 10 celebrated by most people in the nation, Inauguration Day is not really.
Yeah, it's every 4 years. It's a national holiday.
For people in D.C. Do you think that's just because it's impossible to go anywhere anyway? Like,
I mean,
well, of course, they didn't know that when they made it back way back in the day that it was going to be that it was going to be utter gridlock in D.C. on Inauguration Day.
Well, I mean, it's like any public policy. I mean, what was the intent may not necessarily be the practice or the reality, right?
Fair point.
But, you know, one of the pushbacks on adding an 11th day, now some of it was completely racist, you know, racial,
right?
You know, why are we honoring a black man, okay?
Right. I know there was pushback from the southern states. Which is rich, considering Memorial Day in some places is called Stonewall Jackson Day.
Yes.
So,
okay.
Like, I don't want to hear it. But
well,
okay.
I mean, and for the longest time, Decoration Day was in the South, you were honoring Confederate soldiers. Okay?
Right.
You weren't
not all soldiers.
You were only honoring Confederate soldiers.
Exactly.
Right? And interestingly enough, one of the last states that bought into MLK as a holiday, MLK Day as a holiday, was Arizona. And the reason why Arizona went ahead and changed its mind was that economic pressure was put on the state. The NFL had promised to have a Super Bowl in Arizona. And when Arizona was balking at making it a state holiday, okay, it became a huge, if you will, national media conflict. I mean, it was a controversy, right? And it helped drive it. Now, other people say the reason why we end up with MLK Day was Stevie Wonder's song "Happy Birthday," okay, which became extremely popular. But you know, again,
and if any one person could make something happen, it would be Stevie Wonder.
Oh, sure,
he's awesome.
I mean, think about, you know, how many times for various holidays you hear Stevie Wonder's song. I just called to say I love
exactly.
you, right? Okay, and
oh well, and I mean every album,
yes,
from my childhood forward, they're all awesome. So,
well, I mean, hey, for
signed,
me,
sealed, delivered, sir. I mean, like,
well,
just,
I'm glad you mentioned signed, sealed, delivered because, according to some historians, the origin of that expression comes from Marbury versus Madison, the infamous Supreme Court decision.
Really?
Yeah, because Marbury's commission was signed and sealed,
but
never delivered.
Oh,
right. Okay.
That's interesting. We should call Mr. Wonder and ask him. I'm betting he wouldn't have time to answer that question. But anyway,
yeah. So let's go back to national holidays, right? Okay.
Well,
okay. As you pointed out.
Well,
okay,
I'm fascinated by Labor Day. I have to say.
Okay.
Because Labor Day is one of these things is not like the others,
mm-hmm.
right? Everything else is celebrating these big sort of personalities or concepts like Veterans Day and those kind of
Independence
you know,
Day. Right.
Right. And then you get Labor Day. And Labor Day is celebrating the regular guy.
Yeah,
the regular guy doing
yeah.
stuff.
Yep, pretty much.
And I love that. I love the
yes.
I love the idea of it. I love the there was a phrase in my homework. Gonna keep bringing that up.
Yeah, you are.
That says
it's just like
it says
grinding the knife.
That's right. The use of national holidays is to emphasize some great event or principle in the minds of the people by giving them a day of rest. .. But then by honoring the labor with a holiday, the nobility of labor will be maintained.
Yes.
I love that
mm-hmm.
idea. I like the idea that, you know, but labor builds nations. It's
yes.
people's hard
yeah.
work. It's people building stuff and growing stuff and teaching stuff and doing those kinds of things. That's what actually builds a nation. So that's awesome to me.
And when it was first recognized, it was at the turn of the 20th century. When you had
unions and
I mean, and again, this was a pitched battle between the labor of the new economy, which was the industrial economy. You had strikes. Okay, you had the owner class pushing back. Okay, and
oh yeah, this is what 1894, 1895,
yeah.
something like that. So you're having
yes, okay.
I mean, that's when you're also having all those horrible industrial accidents that are bringing about things that eventually become OSHA many years later. But
yes,
that kind of thing where workers were saying, "You can't just lock us in here with no way out because when there's a fire, right? There was a famous fire in New York."
Yeah, and then and you had illegal strikes because they were considered against the law at the turn of the 20th century.
The steel worker, all those guys.
You don't get a legal right to strike until the Wagner Act in 1937.
Oh, okay. So
I mean, the fact that we were, you know, honoring labor – okay, with a holiday.
While we're cracking heads.
Okay. I mean, and again, it's...
The government giveth and the government taketh away.
But it demonstrates, if you will, the difficult history of the United States. I mean, these holidays in many ways reflect the, if you kind of sort of will, the tortured, often horrific, okay, but in other senses, you know, the things that we, you know, we, I hope we still aspire to, right?
Right, the sort of nobler parts of our nature.
Nation, or of our existence,
the
right?
The idea of giving yourself in war to protect ideals,
yeah,
and
right?
To protect, you know, a nascent nation,
yeah,
which is what you see in the early... In the early years, that's about protecting what's still trying to become a nation.
Okay. Or, you know, if you think about, for instance, Thanksgiving Day, you know, as you mentioned a few moments ago, what it means for many Americans today is, okay, we get a really good meal and then we go shopping. Okay, fine, fair enough. But, you know, I listen to my daughter, and for her, Thanksgiving Day, and maybe it's because she's got some really good teachers who really, you know, drive home this point. But for her, Thanksgiving Day is she spends, you know, all day saying thanks to people. And I'm, you know, after a while, it gets a little annoying. But nevertheless, okay.
But it's a good idea.
It's a good idea, right?
Right. And then, what do we give thanks for?
Yeah. I mean, and then she asked me.
For this food and this companionship.
You know, Daddy, what do you give thanks for? And of course, I immediately joke, well, of course, you, Mackenzie. But then, you know, I say coffee. And she's like, oh, come on, Daddy.
If coffee runs your world.
Yeah. But, you know, the larger point here is if you look at our holidays, okay, it really does reflect, okay, you know, so much of our history. Okay,
and our values.
And our values. And the struggle to get some of these holidays recognized by Congress, right? You know, so I mentioned the 15-year struggle to get MLK Day a national holiday, right? You know, part of that effort was a representative from Michigan, a Democrat in the House of Representatives, John Conyers. Every year for 15 years, proposing legislation to create MLK Day, right? Even though many of his colleagues, most of those years, were just like, oh, for the love of Pete, okay, why are you doing this?
But there are several people who do that, aren't there?
Sure.
Who bring up things that they just bring up every year.
Every
like,
year, yes.
I'm going to keep water on stone until eventually
I
drip your resistance down.
Well, I mean,
which is clearly what he did. He dripped down the resistance by slowly building coalitions of people who are like, yeah, that makes sense. And in some ways, MLK Day is about healing national wounds.
Well,
it's
healing national wounds. It's what we aspire or what MLK aspired to. Okay.
Right.
And we got a long way to go to get to that aspiration. But, you know,
but if the I Have a Dream speech doesn't move your heart, there's something wrong with it.
Yeah.
Because it's an incredibly powerful.
I mean, I have my students in my intro class every semester read it. I'm like, you know, guys, okay, this is one of the signal contributions that the American Democratic regime has made to political theory. Okay. This notion that, we can dream that there will be a raceless, classless society, that our children will go ahead and have an experience that will actually be the deliverance, okay, of the promise of the American experiment, right?
Right.
Because, you know.
Right. That there will be enlightenment.
Yes, right.
You know, Biggie.
Yeah, right. And of course, many of them are just like, is this going to be on the exam? But, you know, hey, okay.
Yeah, you're killing me, Smalls.
Right?
Okay. I mean, come on.
But
yeah, I mean, no, that question gets
okay,
asked.
But, though. I mean, even Independence Day. And mind you, I don't participate on social media all that much. But, you know, I'm the one who goes ahead and, you know, has, you know, the Queen of England, you know, saying, you know, happy Independence Day, you ungrateful, you know, former colonist, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, if you think about Independence Day and how many Americans That's like the one day of the year they'll think about the Declaration of Independence, right? Now, I go ahead and joke in my classes that it's just a bunch of well-written complaints, okay?
But, it is, okay, and they're very well-written.
But it's a theory. It's a theory about human existence that was basically challenging the norm. So when I see young people today challenging, you know, norms or systems or political parties, et cetera, you know, I try to remind myself they are doing what our ancestors did. They push norms. The civil rights movement of the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, they were challenging laws, okay, and existing norms. I mean, that's part of the
right.
That's part of the
I'm a person and I'm an equal person and you will treat me as such.
It is a church. That's right. So, you know, if you think about these national holidays, I mean, and by the way, at least during the Obama administration, I don't know if the Trump administration still does this, they actually had a link, okay, where you could go ahead and submit ideas for national holidays. Now, some of them are just completely far-fetched.
Oh, really?
Okay.
What do you have in your pocket?
Okay, so the company that owns Anheuser-Busch beer wants to create a national holiday for the start of Major League Baseball, okay?
You know what? There are probably a bunch of Americans who would be like, I'm on board. I can see your hand waving. Yes. Yes, we see you, Augie.
Yes, right?
You and Saladino were the first,
we were the first
people in the line.
National holiday. Okay. The entire country should, you know, shut down. There should be free admits to baseball games across the country, whether it be major league the whole way down to, you know, minor league, right? And if
Or there should be exhibition games.
Yes.
Right? Just exhibition games. Everywhere people
but
go,
it should
and
be
they
a
watch.
National holiday, right?
Okay. You're behind this one.
Oh, I'm completely behind it. There are some folks.
Oh, the economists. I wonder how much we would lose if we did that.
Okay. Well, speaking about the economy, right?
Except that people would buy.
Oh,
sodas and hot dogs and baseball caps,
parking
and
merchandise.
Everything that's not the ticket.
Yes,
they'd spend all that money on other stuff.
There are some who have posited that the day after the Super Bowl, because so many Americans call in sick after the Super Bowl, because they overindulge.
In a variety of ways,
okay,
including yelling at their televisions,
right?
Which you know,
okay,
is apparently part of the Super Bowl.
Well, there have been proposals to go ahead and make the first weekend of the March Madness, the college basketball.
Oh, because more people in the South, at least, are on their computers.
Oh, it's across
picking
the country.
Their teams, watching stuff. They're in local sports bars, but they're also like looking at their brackets and doing all their stuff. Like, it's a whole thing. I had no idea.
Oh,
okay. So here's the thing. I lived in Utah when I went to college the first time, and then I moved home,
mm-hmm.
Back to North Carolina.
Yeah,
and I was living in
basketball country,
right? And I was living in Durham.
Oh,
hello,
wow.
Right?
Yes.
So between UNC State and Duke, I was like, I didn't understand that.
Okay.
I have moved. It's almost like I moved to a place where there's a required religion.
Yes.
And the religion is basketball.
It's college basketball.
And if you don't know who the teams are and what their standing is, and if you haven't made a bracket, people shun you.
Yeah,
it's,
you're social outcast.
It's like
outcast.
When the Amish drive up in a Mercedes, right? Like, they're like, oh, no, you're not Amish anymore. It's the same.
I'm going to make it amazing. I'm going to clarify something, gently correct something you just said. You said UNC State. Okay, there's UNC.
I said UNC State and Duke.
Okay, well, you said it.
Because there's three schools.
You pulled it all together.
I went to NC State. Trust me, I know there's a difference. And I'm just going to go on record as saying I am ABC. Anybody but Carolina. Because I went to state.
And by the way, this is a really good example of civil discourse.
Are you a Carolina fan?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, I am.
Well, I like you anyway.
In fact,
despite your clear, misguided choices in life.
In fact, both Saladino and I are UNC.
What?
Yes.
Oh, I might have to rethink my feelings about Poli Sci. Now I got to find out what Newman and Twig and Kamimia, he in Freud's time, what they care about.
I don't know. I don't know if they've necessarily follow college basketball, okay. But I can tell you this: there are three political science faculty here at VCU who are huge Carolina fans. Burdett, Saladino, and me, and I just gave you the, shall we say, the seriousness of our fandom, okay? It is Burdett, Saladino, and me.
I see.
Right?
But you can't live in Durham and not be swept up in that world. So I could see where
and economists are like,
if you said to people in North Carolina that Friday needs to be a holiday, they'd be like, well, it's already a holiday. What do you mean? We don't go to work anyway. Like, thanks for recognizing what we're already doing.
Right? Well, and here's the other thing about national holidays, and I don't know if you caught it in your homework, okay? But the fact that they're on Mondays.
Yes.
It's a big deal.
Yes. Okay, so it's a law. You have it in here in my homework.
Yes.
The Unified Monday Holiday Act from June of 1968, which I guess made things Mondays instead of the day they had been picked. Memorial Day was May 30th. And
which could have happened in the middle of the week. So you have this issue of, do you have employees who basically go ahead and say, well, since the holiday's in the middle of the week,
I'm going to take Thursday and Friday off.
Or Monday and Tuesday off. Okay.
Is that why?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. I honestly assumed that they were making a long weekend.
Mm-mm.
Right,
nope.
Saturday,
nope.
Sunday, Monday.
Nope.
Oh, but they were trying to prevent super long
weekends. That's right.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I wouldn't have guessed that. So there's one, though, that got moved back. It was moved to a Monday and then moved back. I think that's Veterans Day.
Yeah, because Veterans Day is now...
It's back on November 11th, whatever day that...
Yes.
And if it falls on the weekend, then you celebrate either Friday or Monday.
Monday, that's right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Because the veterans were like, what are you doing moving us to a Monday? We don't care if people take middle of the week off. What's wrong with you people? I did not know that's what that was about. So that was preventing larger scale vacation-y type things.
Yeah, in Veterans Day kept on being jerked around. It was in November, then it was moved to the last Monday of October, and veterans groups were like, okay, we already have one.
Armistice Day was a specific day.
Yeah, that's right, and we want to be as close to that specific day. And, oh yeah, by the way, October already had Columbus Day, so quit jerking us around, okay? And it's kind of sort of funny because if you think about it, a lot of our national holidays, okay, at least four or five of them are within a two-month period of time. Veterans Day, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, and MLK, okay?
Right. The fall and winter.
Yeah, right? Okay. I mean, they're jammed. I mean, so again.
They're squished in there.
Yeah. I mean, and we have a kind of sort of different work life cycle, right? Because we work at universities.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we've mentioned before, when I say to my mom, I have to wait to do that till, you know, intercession. My mom's like, what the heck's an intercession? Right. I've worked in
universities
25 years.
Yes.
And she's still, No, my world revolves around August to December, January to June, January to May.
Yeah.
And then June and July are the summer session.
Yes.
That's how life works. That's how vacations work. That's how,
you cram your doctor's appointments. You get repairs done on your house, your car, et cetera, all during that period of time. And I've had
during the breaks,
various service providers are like, why not, a Monday in February? I'm like,
It's not spring break.
Right, it's not spring break. I'm teaching. And then they're like, yeah, but you need this medical procedure. I'm like, well,
it's going to have to
wait
till
either spring break or the end of the spring semester. Those are your basic choices.
Right.
And they're like, it's your body. And I'm like, okay.
Well, yeah, but I can't get in until spring break. Sorry.
Because I'm not going ahead and taking off 2 or 3 days, for this, right?
Right, because then you have to find somebody to cover your class or you have to find something for people to do and there's all this drama. Yeah, no. Our world doesn't work that way.
But because I've worked with a large number of federal and state government employees, I mean, they all joke that basically their work cycle, okay, is, you know, middle of January until basically like Thanksgiving, because once Thanksgiving hits, you got Thanksgiving, then they come back from Thanksgiving and they work two and a half weeks, and then they have Christmas, okay, and basically Christmas to New Year's. Well, you basically hope that there is like no, you know, crisis, you know, national, you know, national security.
Because there's nobody around.
You know, nobody's around, okay, and really you kind of sort of hope that, you know, our enemies or Mother Nature waits until like after Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah.
Okay. Because that's when everybody expects to be back at work, right? And I'm just like, okay.
Well, and they're also, their fiscal year is different than our fiscal year. Like their fiscal year ends in October.
September 30th. And their fiscal year begins on October 1st.
Right.
Whereas ours runs from July 1st to June 30th.
Yeah.
Right?
So I get all messed up when my friends in the federal government say, yeah, we can't buy that until, like my friends who work in federal libraries say, yeah, I can't buy that until October.
October.
And I'm like, why that? Oh, right. Because you don't have money until then.
Yeah. But because we work for the state, okay, by October, okay, our bosses are already asking us, what are you planning to do, okay, in the spring?
Right. So what conferences are you going to try to go to so I can see if we have any money or we have any? Yeah,
yeah, right. Okay.
Right, because we'd like to buy some new office chairs and we need to know if we have enough money or not. Yeah, it's a whole different animal it works.
And holidays affect so much of our, if you will, work. And for that matter, in family existence.
And the schools.
Oh, good Lord.
When schools get out for a holiday, there's a lot of drama.
Sure.
Because if the state recognizes something but the federal government doesn't, then parents have to take off of work if they're federal employees
or find daycare. So
right.
Me and my ex-wife have a situation for next Tuesday. It's Super Tuesday primary. Virginia is one of the states, right? And in Virginia, many of the polling sites are public schools.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, one of the, you know, when Henrico County, where our daughter goes to school, when they came out with the calendar, okay, by the way, the calendar for this year was like released in late 2018, right? Okay. It's like the federal government budget.
They plan way ahead.
Yeah. And they have to, right?
Okay. Because they have to know these things.
That's right. You know, one of the first questions I asked, because it's Tuesday and that's when I have my daughter, is, okay, is her after school care open on that day? Otherwise, it's bring, you know, daughter to work day. Unofficially.
Right. Go get her and bring her and say, here, play with my iPad while I teach.
Yeah.
Constitutional
law. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Which, you know, hey, my students love because, you know, they got something else to look at other than me. And, of course, my daughter is much more adorable than I am. Right?
Yeah. Well.
Okay. But, and of course, Mackenzie loves it because everybody wants to talk to her.
Yeah, everybody wants to say hi.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, hey, you have such friendly students and colleages. I'm like, No, I don't. What are you talking about?
Friendly to you.
Okay, but speaking of voting, right?
I was going to ask you about that because, okay, so tell me why.
Every year.
Tell me why we can't have a national holiday for voting day.
Well, we could.
Wait, so I know that one of the arguments is, yes, but some people still wouldn't get that day off.
That's true.
People who drive buses, people who or public transportation, people who run restaurants and stuff like that, they can't just close, right? Like, so some people wouldn't get the holiday off anyway. But wouldn't it benefit a large number of people?
Sure. Sure. There are many Western European nations that have their elections, okay, either as a national holiday or they have their elections on weekends. Okay.
Right.
And their voter turnout is significantly higher than the voter turnout in the United States. And history.
Well, okay, wait. So picture you're it's the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, right?
Yes.
You get out of bed. You roll out of bed. You have to get your kid to school.
Yes.
You have to get yourself to the gym and then to work.
Yes.
Because that's your routine, right?
Yeah.
And you have to teach. And then you have to go pick your kid up from school. Where is the time?
Yeah.
Either you take her to the polls with you, which is great because your kid is mobile and well-behaved. But if you didn't have one that was mobile or you didn't have one that was able to able to be at a polling place for whatever reason. Right? So then you drop them off, and then you're trying to run around and get it done. So you either have to leave work early or come into work late. So
or not go to the gym or, you know, not schedule particular meetings. I mean, it
turns into a lot of drama.
Yes. If it was
a person who has a kid.
Yeah.
It's less drama for me.
But even if you have other family members that you take care of. Okay?
Right. Well, that's true.
Okay.
And independent.
Okay. What about American?
Or if there's a family with one car.
Or some Americans who have like two or three jobs.
Right. Right. I mean, how do they get?
Because, with some jobs, there is so much, supply that your employer could easily go ahead and say, no, I'm not giving you time off to go vote. And if you take it off, don't come back.
Right.
Now, you might say, well, that's a really crappy boss. But on the other hand,
that guy's got to cover hours.
And there are plenty of other people who want your job.
Right.
Okay. So, if it was a national holiday, and my students have heard me say this for, well over 20 years, make it a national holiday, right? What would it hurt?
Well, okay. And the other thing is, we talked earlier at some length about the idea of values.
Yes.
If you value a thing, then support the thing that you value.
Yeah.
Right? If what you want is for people to vote, then celebrate the idea of voting, and not with a sticker that says I voted,
yes.
Although that's lovely, and I'm happy the county gives me one every time, but celebrate it with the inspirational ideas the way you do other major holidays.
Sure.
This is a thing we support because it is little d democracy, the right thing to do.
Yes.
It is the right thing to do to encourage people to vote and to celebrate voting as an act.
Yeah,
like,
if you're going to talk the talk.
And then go see Hamilton.
Yes. Well, but what...
Or whatever.
But what studies of nations to where Election Day is a holiday, what they also demonstrate is the huge economic impact it has. Because in many communities in those nations, it is truly a celebration. People go to vote, and then they go ahead and have parties. They have, depending on the time of year, cookouts, bars, restaurants do tremendous business that day because it's a celebration of their nation, their culture, et cetera.
Right.
Okay.
It could be 4th of July. It could be 4th of July in
November.
In November.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, it could be a celebration of that which is American.
And instead of it being a work day, which presents another barrier to a whole bunch of Americans working, and I get it. Some people criticize and say, well, if voting is that important, you'll make the sacrifice. Yes, I guess I could not go to the gym. Okay. Or yes, I could go ahead and come in late to one of my classes or make sure that I don't have a particular class scheduled on, Tuesdays.
Because you're not going to be fired from the university for doing that. No. I mean, what I'm saying is you have a benefit.
Yes.
You have a benefited position in that sense.
Sure.
You might get called on the carpet, maybe.
On the other hand.
By the head of the department.
But how many times,
if you were working an hourly job.
Yes. Yeah.
And you had to clock in and you clock in 2 hours late, that's just 2 hours late. You don't get paid for.
That's right.
And so people say, well, it's your patriotic duty. Well, yeah, but I also have to feed my kids. That's my patriotic duty.
We go back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Okay, before you get to self-actualization, the bottom level of the hierarchy of needs, are things like, food, security, housing, etc. Okay, the kinds of things that you kind of sort of need a job to like pay for, right? And you're right. I mean, and think about how in the last few years, we've received communication from upper university administration telling us as faculty to be understanding if our students, miss class because they're voting or they are volunteering at the,
at the polling sites or with the various parties.
That's right.
Okay. Right, because we want them to be active.
That's right.
We want them to be politically active.
So
we encourage that.
So
and
we're going to,
get time.
Sure.
There's a volunteer time that
yes.
the university allows
yes.
for people who want to go work the polls.
Yes. So if we're going to talk the talk, let's walk the walk,
yeah.
right? And
And let's make public transportation that day free.
Free. Yeah.
Like
subways,
part of
buses.
The problem is that you can't get to the polling place because you can't physically get there. Let's do whatever we can.
Sure.
to make it free. Buses are free, subways are free, everything's free that day. I know that would cost a lot of money, but sometimes you have to invest in order to
walk.
Get democracy, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're going to go ahead and say that voting is important, okay? There are a few things here that we're talking about that would make it so much easier, and we know this. And it's not just Americans, okay? It's people and democracy.
What's the stop on that?
What do you mean?
What's the stop on getting a voting day holiday?
All you'd have to do is convince the Congress to go ahead and create it.
Surely somebody brings it up.
Oh, sure.
Each time.
It gets proposed all the time, but it gets sent to a committee or a subcommittee, and then it dies.
Mr. Strauss,
yes.
the writer of my homework,
yes.
he says several times, which I want to credit him for, whenever he's talking about it, he only brought up a couple. He didn't bring up the ones you brought up, which is interesting. He only brought up a couple of recent holiday legislation things. But are you laughing at me?
No, I like the not too subtle dig at me because I brought up the post-Super Bowl national holiday
and who started
the baseball season.
He's looking at ones that are slightly more likely to become holidays. But he always says things like,
"Hey, don't discount
the joint resolution was referred to the House blah 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 committee, and no further action was taken." Mm-hmm. He must say no further action was taken about six times in this report, and I guess that's what happens.
Yes.
Is that Mr. Conyers would bring up, we ought to have a Martin Luther King holiday, and everybody goes, "Aha," and they put it to committee.
Yes.
Where it just sits.
Yeah, because remember in a previous
right.
podcast,
committees can kill things by simply ignoring them.
Yes, committee chairs can go ahead and say, "Let's table that for further study."
Let's table that until a week from never.
Yeah.
And then that's the end of that.
Until I'm no longer a member of Congress.
Exactly.
Okay.
Until I don't have to deal with this anymore.
By the way, do not discount the passion of sports fans in regards to some of these becoming holidays. I'm just saying.
If you got sufficient number of people elected to Congress, I suppose that they could.
But to your larger point, this gets proposed with some regularity. Let's make Election Day a national holiday. But until you can go ahead and have interest groups mobilized to put pressure on members of Congress. That's pluralism. That's interest group politics. That's group theory explanation of public policy. Okay, you're going to have to make it worth the while of members of Congress to actually take action on this.
It shouldn't take that.
Well, maybe in an ideal world, it should not.
I mean, okay? They should just do it because it's the right thing to do. Dang it. I'm just saying. I get why, and there are some groups within the government, not within the government, but there are some groups, that are around the government in various ways, lobbyists and that sort of things.
Involved in policy.
Who don't particularly want to see a large turnout in an election because then your results become even more unpredictable than they currently are, which I think would be amazing, but there you go. So that also may be playing part of it is that groups that want to see that being a national holiday are maybe not as loud or as powerful as groups that would prefer to see the turnout not be.
Sure. I mean, because
80%. Does Australia have something like a 90% turnout on there?
Yeah, it's pretty regularly well over 80%. Yeah.
What in the world? I mean, what would happen? First of all, if we had hanging chads, we had to count for that many people. We'd still be looking at the 2000 election. So there's a part of me that probably should be grateful. But also, there would be no question about a mandate.
Oh, hey.
If 80%. Because what did Ronald, didn't Ronald Reagan say something? You would know this because you know all these arcane things. I say with love.
I picked up a lot of love in that one.
No. But Reagan said something about you only have to be elected by the majority of the people who vote.
Yes.
Right? Like it's not. Yeah. You're not elected by the majority of the people.
No.
You're elected by the majority of the rather small group of people
who voted.
That come out to vote.
Yes.
And
yes.
You know, that's terrible.
Yes.
For us to have a democracy where we phone it in that way, or we just let other people vote.
Well, I mean, how many
people in the United States vote percentage-wise? Do you know?
Typically, it hovers around 50 to about 53-54% of those eligible to vote. Now, understand, a whole bunch of Americans aren't eligible to vote because they never register. Or in many states, they can't vote because they are a felon. Okay.
And a whole bunch of them are under the age of 18.
So you're talking about millions of Americans who are not eligible to vote because of either age, they're not old enough, two, they never registered to vote. Okay. And even states where they make it really, really easy for you to register to vote, there are a whole bunch of their citizens who don't ever register to vote.
Yeah. Aren't there some states where they talk about having, when you go to get your driver's license, you're automatically registered to vote?
And actually, that was a federal law. It's known as the Motor Voter Registration Law, where each state has to give you the option of registering to vote when you apply for a driver's license.
Okay.
But some states make it even easier. You can register the same day as you vote.
Oh, okay.
Okay, Virginia's not that way. You got to go ahead and register beforehand, okay? And Virginia still requires a photo ID.
Right.
Yes, okay.
A lot of states do that.
Yeah, they still do, okay? But
if it's 53% of the people who are able to vote, then in the United States, it's probably what, 30% of the population, 25% of the population?
For presidential elections, you get closer to about 40% off year elections. It's where you just mentioned. Okay.
Of the entire population.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So you have to win a majority of 40% of the American populace.
Sure. Yeah.
And the other 60% can go hang because they're not.
Yeah.
They're not in any way engaging in the process.
Most political behavior scholars are like, that isn't a problem in a democracy. But others are like, hey, those who are eligible, okay, to register to vote, who choose not to, we oftentimes don't survey them because they're not the folks who usually respond to surveys. So we don't know why they didn't register to vote. Are they disaffected? Do they not care? Are they actually satisfied with others making the decision?
Right. They're not voting may, in fact, be voting.
Yes.
After a fashion.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, y'all go ahead and pick. I'll be fine with whoever you choose. See, okay. I don't feel that way about anything. I don't want other people to pick what I'm having for dinner, let alone who's going to be president of the United States.
Yeah, I'm pretty much enough of, I got this. Okay. But
well, when I'm president, yeah. I'm going to require everybody vote. I don't know how yet. I have to work that out.
Haven't we already discussed this in a previous podcast?
Yeah, and I think you told me I couldn't do it, and I'm just going to ignore you and figure out a way.
By the way, presidents frequently do this. And
ignore you?
Well, let's face it. every governmental decision maker should probably ignore me. But I'm talking about the fact that most presidents at some point or the other will ignore the advice and counsel that they receive from, you know, the White House legal counsel, the White House staff, their secretary of whatever.
Their personal constitutional.
Yes. Yes.
Expert professor.
Yeah, well, I mean, and there actually is an office in the executive office of the president. It's called the White House Legal Counsel's Office.
Right.
And their only client is the president.
But
that's their only client.
But it's the office of the presidency.
Yeah.
Not the president.
Yeah, but there is
like
only...
in the sense of they don't represent him in private court cases and stuff like that, right? They only represent
the White House. Okay, well, it's
meaning the office of
the presidency.
President.
Yeah.
So they go and throw themselves in front of things that are unconstitutional or that he's likely to be
in trouble constitutionally,
but they don't like they wouldn't defend him in a criminal case.
No, but you just went ahead and said you're going to issue an executive order forcing all Americans to vote.
Right.
Okay, the White House.
No, they would be leaping in front of me trying to stop me from doing
that. Yeah, they would issue a memo that says, President Rogers, you can't do that. Okay. And you might go ahead and say, well, thanks for sharing.
That's right. I can't hear you over the sound of me doing it. This is me writing my name on the bottom of it. Yep.
I can't hear you as Air Force One is, you know, flying into the sky. Because
right.
I'm president and you're not.
Exactly.
Yes.
So this degenerated a little bit, but...
oh, good Lord.
Yeah, they often do, that's a first.
That's us. Yes.
So, but really...
Okay, so Neil, let me ask you, since you're usually the one asking questions
okay,
in this conversation, okay, other than having Election Day be a national holiday, off the top of your head, what other national holidays would you like to see?
I would like to see, I don't know whether it could be a national holiday or not, but I would like to see some sort of celebration of the First Nations people, of Native Americans.
Okay.
I think that they have long been overlooked and their contributions to American culture have been overlooked. And I understand that there have been attempts made also for some sort of Latinx cultural day. So I'm wondering if what we ought to have is some sort of cultural, like celebrate...
What, the melting pot that is America?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
Where you talk about all the huge contributions that all of the cultures have made to making us who we are. So maybe something like that. I could see something like that would be really appealing and would be a nice, again, support of our values. The idea that, I mean, when we are at our best, not when we are being petty and small, but when we are at our best, what we do is we say, everybody here contributes something. And everybody here matters, right? Like that's, at least that's what I was taught as a kid. Everybody here matters. So
I mean,
maybe if we had something that celebrated that, it would be nice.
Yeah, because two thoughts that come to my mind for national holidays. One is recognition of women's suffrage, which is the 100th anniversary is this year. And as we'll probably discuss in a future podcast episode, that will be the focus of VCU's Constitution Day lecture.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one that comes to my mind, and it might be part of what you just mentioned, but, you know, Statue of Liberty Day or Immigration Day, okay? You know, again, America's history of immigration. And again, we've not always been good about how we address immigration.
Right.
But we are in many ways, not always, but in many ways, a nation of immigrants. I would actually like to see that. considered. Again, you know, I could be.
Can I just say that the firestorm that would bring?
Oh, sure.
Holy cow.
Yeah, sure. But I would like to see the discussion.
But a holiday might also help us work towards better policy implementation as we go forward.
Better consideration, better understanding.
Right. Because isn't that part of what a lot of these days are about?
Yeah. I mentioned this when we early on in this particular podcast episode. Okay, it is a reflection in many ways of what we aspire to.
Right.
Okay. As much as it is the contributions, the sacrificing of a whole bunch of people that went before us.
Right. When I was a kid, and I know we're going to wrap up soon, but I want to tell you this really briefly. When I was a kid, my mother on Veterans Day, she made cupcakes and stuff like that. We would take them cookies and cupcakes. There was a kind of an old guys spot in our town where they kind of all hung out. And a lot of them were World War II veterans. And we would sit and listen to their stories because sometimes that's what they need is to tell their stories and to connect to other generations and explain what it was like. And some of them didn't want to tell stories and they didn't, right? Like nobody got pushed, but some of them, and they didn't tell what I think of as war stories, because I was a little kid, they didn't tell war stories and bombs were blowing and people's heads were falling. Like, they didn't do that, but they told about walking through fields in France and how it smelled and how it looked different. And it was different from North Carolina, these boys who'd never been anywhere else. And all of a sudden, here they were in France.
Yeah.
And one of them, I'll never forget, one of those gentlemen explained to me how cows sound different in France. And they don't, but the noise that the kids make to indicate a cow is not moo, because that's not a common sound in the French language. It's a different noise.
And
he was explaining that when little kids would tell you where there was a cow, they would make the noise, and he was like, "What the heck is that noise?" Right? And it took him a while to figure out that's what they meant. And he said, "I'm just telling you, French cows speak different language than all cows." And he was this great Southern old guy.
I mean,
North Carolina.
I mean, on Veterans Day,
makes me happy to think about it.
And my mom and my grandmother still do this. They go out and buy small American flags, go to the cemetery where they have plots already bought and reserved for. And for every tombstone that recognizes a veteran, they put a small American flag there.
Yep. My mom does that for her brothers who served.
They buy a couple hundred, and they do it every year, right? And as a kid, I was just like, we're going to the cemetery, and they were like, hey, whether we liked a war or not, whether we understood a war or not. These people sacrificed.
Yep.
And we should honor their sacrifice and never forget their sacrifice. Now, as I got older, I was just like, okay, and I understood better.
Right.
Okay, it made more sense.
Now we're losing our really older veterans. Yeah. Like we've lost almost all of our World War II veterans.
Yeah. Yes, yep.
And we're going to start losing our Korea veterans and then our Vietnam veterans.
Veterans, yeah.
And it's, we need to listen to those stories and pay attention to what they have to tell us.
There are so many scholars who point out the importance of telling tales, of anecdotes and folklore. But I'm glad we went ahead and talked about federal holidays, because I got to admit, and you know this, I'm not one who usually celebrates holidays. I just work. Okay.
But you would celebrate the heck out of a baseball holiday.
I probably would.
I would get a text with a picture of you and Saladino at some park somewhere.
Some ballpark.
With the entire gear on.
With hot dogs and a beer.
And a beer, grinning like fools. Like, we're at the game. Where are you? And that's great. Different holidays mean different things to different people. I'm not, I like Independence Day, but I'm not. Yeah. Like, huge on it. But my sister lives in Atlanta. They have a great show, and she loves it. Like, they do big.
Yeah.
And I imagine the one over in D.C. is beautiful. But so different holidays for different people.
But in doing this research, it forced me to think about how holidays are more than just, you know, a day off or a paid day off. It made me think about federalism, because states don't have to go ahead and follow the national holidays. But also, as the research from Jacob Stress, points out, you know, they speak to what we have been as a country, what we may aspire to, and perhaps how we can get better. And anytime a holiday or any day can lead to that kind of reflection, I think is a good thing.
And the language is pretty.
Yes.
In a lot of the things.
Yes.
One of them is allow this day as a holiday with pay so that they might not suffer loss of wages by reason of joining in paying their respects to the memory of those who died in the service of their country.
Yes.
Like, they're written in these sort of solemn, beautiful language.
Yes.
So if I can find them, I will go out and link to the different to the different pieces for the different holidays if people want to go and read the language.
Our
language is a little less floofy, but I'm assuming that if we came up with a new holiday, we would go back to language.
I'm glad you went ahead and mentioned that, because I mean, just the rhetoric, right?
Right.
Okay.
I do love congressional rhetoric sometimes, because sometimes it's absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, I mean, the kind of soaring. Again, you mentioned, you know, I Have a Dream, but I mean, there are some laws that have purpose statements to where I'm like, why can't more congressional statutes have this kind of energetic, lively prose, to where when you read it, you're not like, where's my blanket and the pillow so I can take a nap?
Right. And this is the worst run-on sentence in the history of humankind.
Right.
Because they often start off with that. The first paragraph is one sentence. You're like, okay, are you just anti-periods and capitals? Are you,
punctuation of any sort?
Exactly. We just throw grammar out the window. So, yeah, they're beautifully written, but they're also written from the right purpose, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So thanks for talking with me about it.
Oh, no. Hey. I'm glad you had this. I'm sorry I gave you homework.
No, I'm bitter, but I'm glad. I'm full of depth. Actually, it was a really good read, and I would suggest people read it because it's actually not very long. Sometimes congressional research service reports are interminable. This one is not. It's really well written, and it's about 10 pages, so it's not very long.
Yeah.
I would encourage people to read it, and we'll put up a link.
All right.
Thanks.
Sure.
You've been listening to Civil Discourse, brought to you by VCU Libraries. Opinions expressed are solely the speaker's own and do not reflect the views or opinions of VCU or VCU Libraries. Special thanks to the workshop for technical assistance. Music by Isaac Hobson. Find more information at guides.library.vcu.edu/discourse. As always, no documents were harmed in the making of this podcast.